Hey, Internet, it's your boys from Brothering Around, and we got a deal for you through our good friends at Audible.com. This week's episode is actually brought to you by Audible.com, where you can try and listen to over 180,000 audiobooks at your leisure. And hey, if you use audibletrial.com/brotheringaround, you can go sign up for your free 30-day trial. And guess what? The best part, you get to pick a book, and it's yours to keep forever. On the house, courtesy of your boys here at Brothering Around. So go to audibletrial.com/brotheringaround. Sign up for the free 30 days. No requirements. No hidden weird blood packs you got to make with Amazon. Cancel any time. But guess what? You get to keep that book forever. Courtesy of us, your friends here at Brothering Around. Oh, gang, it's that time. It's that time of the week. Feeling good. Actually, not actually feeling good. Like, I'm on cold medicine. Right. Yeah. But you know, mentally, like, mentally I'm there.
Work right now.
Yeah, this is all a work. Yeah, I'm actually hopped up on all kinds of Mucinex. But, so I do apologize. With that being said, I do apologize if I start coughing and hacking up a lung later. I'll try to move away from the mic and all that good stuff, but it's probably going to be on there. I'm not quick on the mute button, so. But I got me a big my Yeti cup. I gotta mail you a Yeti cup, man. Like, I need to.
We need to get sponsored by Yeti cup, then.
Yeti cup. We need to get this free trials of Yeti cups, and we just don't return them.
You know, 30-day trial.
Free 30-year trial of a Yeti cup.
30-year trial. There you go.
And then just rip up the receipt.
Right.
Oh man, but yeah, it's a new week. I was excited because I got a question on Twitter. When was it? Probably about 4 days ago, 5 days ago. Can't remember when I tweeted this, but someone asked through direct messages, like, they said they liked the show and they wanted to know what my top five, because I guess they listened and they made fun of the whole top five rant I went on. What are my top five favorite wrestling matches?
Okay.
And I was like, oh shit. Like, it's like choosing between children. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a subjective, because everyone watches wrestling for a different reason. Like, you and I, we love, you know, we'll always go back to it, but Colonel Sanders, Dolph Ziggler, like, you know what I'm saying? What? Now, would I recommend that to, like, everyone? No, absolutely not, because they'll be like, what is this horse shit? But
that's the carny wrestling.
That's carny wrestling. Yeah, that is straight up the guy running the Ferris wheel doesn't have an arm, and then you wonder why he doesn't have it anymore. You're like, should I get on this ride right now?
Yeah.
You just start doubting yourself. But it made me think, and I was like, all right, you know, me and Marco, we are actually huge marks. So, you know, and I gave a shout out to Marco. I was like, Marco, you got to think about this. Like, we had about half a week to think this up, but if we were to have a top five list of our favorite wrestling matches, so all of these that we are going to recommend, we're not saying it's like the best match you're ever going to see or anything like that, but these are the top five. Each of us, I think, have a different list. What I'm interested in, actually, is I wonder if our lists will have any overlap.
You know
what I mean? I was thinking about that. I was like, ooh, well, what if there's a list that's on, or what if there's a match that's on both of our lists? Which is very possible. As you and I, we kind of like the, I guess it'd be called a work shoot style.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, you and I, we're martial arts fans. We like UFC. We like the whole blurring the lines of reality and kayfabe. And kayfabe, if you don't know what it is, it's the kayfabe. It technically means protecting the finish. Like, so because if you say kayfabe to a wrestler and you call it like fake reality or something, they're going to laugh in your face because that's not what kayfabe is. Kayfabe is doing everything you can to protect the finish. So that's why you see back in the day, the bad guys and the good guys would use different vehicles. Because then if they came out, if like the main bad guy and the main good guy came out of the same vehicle and they're laughing and joking and high-fiving, then people would be like, wait a minute, they're really good friends? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's exposed.
You expose the business. And, yeah, you know, that shit gets said all the time now. Oh, Joey Ryan, you know, people punch his dick, so then it exposes the business. And you're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, it's all dumb.
His dick is not indestructible.
Yeah, you're right. He does. He flexes. I think it's great, but I'm a mark, so it doesn't matter.
I think it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, it's golden. Yeah. And, like, you know, you listen to Jim Cornette shoot interviews and stuff, and he hates Chikara. He hates Kenny Omega. He hates anything that ever had a joke with it. Because he thinks it should be, you know, everyone should be 7'9" and 800 pounds and, mm-hmm, you know, old school baby face and heel and stuff. And that type of blurring of the lines, you know, that's kind of old school stuff, which I'm still into. I think there's still a crux of it that exists. You have to have, in order to have a good guy, you have to have a bad guy. Like, that's just the nature of it. There's some basic rules that you have to follow. But the whole industry has evolved a little bit. It's, yeah, everyone's a little more athletic now, and everybody,
yeah,
they grew up watching Stone Cold Steve Austin. So these performers, you know, you got Ricochet, you got Will Ospreay, you got guys that are huge marks, but then they're also insanely talented. They're doing flips and cartwheel. I mean, all this shit, stuff that's just superhuman. But then on the other side, you still got, you know, Okada and, You got guys that are doing the old school Japanese strong style. So there's something for everyone. So that's why I thought this top five list was such an interesting dynamic, because, hey, this is kind of a wrestling podcast sometimes. So let's dig on in. It's a good way for the listener to kind of figure out what we like as far as wrestling. But then also think of this as our holidays buyer's guide, because if you listen to our recommendations, there's not going to be a bad match on this list. Like, between the 10 matches we pick, you're going to be in paradise. Like, you're going to find something that you dig, like, almost guaranteed. But yeah, so I was wondering, and I know we talked a little bit before the show, but you said yours is not necessarily in a numerical order, but yours are just matches that you really found memorable. Like, that even if you haven't seen it in 5 years, you still remember every beat. You still remember, you know, every movement, and you're just in
right.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, my matches are not in, like, oh man, this is like the number one best match of all time because of maybe it's this combination of people and the chemistry was there that night and the audience. It was just more of, I feel like all the matches that I'm about to list had like a particular thing of telling the story.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I'm thinking along the lines of, as me growing up from like starting to like wrestling, mm-hmm, to where I'm at now. I believe these matches, they tell a story within a story, and also like within like the ability of a professional wrestler.
Gotcha. Okay.
And what they can do with the chemistry of each other. So do you want me to start off?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. So this is mixing basically the storytelling inside the ring, plus the athleticism and the dynamic that the two or however many competitors are in the ring that they have with one another. So it's funny you say that, because all of my matches have that same exact thing. Like, it's a mix of this perfect storm of, mm-hmm, it all worked, everything clicked. But go ahead.
So I think the very first one I thought of was at the very beginning of me starting to like wrestling, like my first year or something. It was it was Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. I want to say that was WrestleMania 3
yes, with the slam.
I want to say it was WrestleMania 3. Yeah,
with the body slam.
Because of the body slam. That exactly. I think that was pretty much the very first wrestling anything that I've ever watched. So I didn't watch WrestleMania. I didn't watch any of the TV shows. I wasn't turned to it as a young kid for whatever reason. Yeah. But when I actually got a chance to watch it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, it's awesome, because these guys are fighting each other. And me not knowing what's going on between Hogan and Andre the Giant, the story was in the match itself, where Hulk Hogan's like, you know, babyface, like ultimate good guy, versus this, you know, huge giant that's hulking over Hulk Hogan. So the story they were telling was like, Hulk Hogan can't body slam Andre the Giant. There's just no way. He's too big. He weighs too much. Hulk Hogan like attempts multiple times to try to body slam him, and nothing's working. So like Andre the Giant is just overpowering him. And then at some point, you know, you see, if you know Hulk Hogan enough, you'll see that like once he like, I guess once he gets punched enough, he'll like start hulking up, and you know, he'll like absorb the blows and just gets more hyped up. So like once he gets his thing going, you know, he gets his shots in, he gets his signature stuff in. What was it that made him slam Andre? Was it a big boot?
I think so.
Boot into a slam?
I think so. Yeah, because it was a follow up. So he I think he kicked him in the stomach, and what it did is it made Andre like lean down a little bit, or he like tried to use something to support, or he got, so basically it was a move to get him into position.
So like and prior to the actual slam, like Hulk Hogan was trying to body slam Andre the Giant in a stationary position. So this one, the one where he got it, was Andre the Giant was in momentum. So I want to say it was a big boot, let Andre hit the ropes to come back, and then Hulk Hogan was able to pick him up and slam him, and that crowd roared and stood up and like just was jumping for joy. Like, he did it, he really did it. And so yeah, he got the leg drop, 1, 2, 3, and that was that. And that also made me reminded me of, I miss when wrestlers' entrances had to come in with that tractor thing.
Oh yeah, the weird like cherry, the Lowe's cherry picker. Yeah.
So I remember that. I was like, oh man, I miss that a little bit.
It was always, because I remember and I don't know why this is, the person I remember the most coming out on that thing was Coco Beware. Because he was doing the little like movement with his jacket, and that bird was on his shoulder, and I was like, "What the hell?"
He was dancing.
He's going for it, man.
And they were going fast, because I guess like from the entrance to the ring, it's pretty far, so they had to use that whatever that thing was. Yeah, so they were going at a pretty decent speed, and like they were getting to the ring and out of the ring like in a pretty fast speed. But yeah, that's the one I remember. Like if I'm going to numerical order it, that would be my number 5.
Nice. Okay. So my number 5 is a match actually fairly recent. I think, let me look at, so it's the most recent match on my list. It's only about 3 years old, almost to the day, 3 years old. So it happened in Pro Wrestling Noah, and a Japanese promotion, and it was Kenta versus Yuji Nagata. And so the whole story was, because we all know 2006 to like 2010, Kenta was an assassin. That's my favorite wrestler ever, is that 4 years of Kenta was just, it was perfect. And they booked him like a millionaire. Like, he was basically the Japanese Conor McGregor. If you were to think of a personality of like, okay, Kenta is this guy, he's coming out to thug hip hop music, he has dog tags on, and then like he wears 4 t-shirts to the ring. That way he pulls out a Sharpie with his teeth, and then he like signs one of the shirts and peels it off and throws it.
I was seeing that one of them.
So just awesome. Like, you look at autographs. And all these Japanese guys, Kenta!
Yeah.
Like, just screaming it. Like, this is a side note, but the only person to get more hilarious Japanese fans yelling was Prince Devitt. Because whenever Prince Devitt was brought in to wrestling in Japan, he was an Armani model for Armani Japan. So you would hear these Japanese girls going crazy, Devitt! Like, just screaming for Prince Devitt. It makes me laugh. You can't watch a match of his in Japan without hearing like 10,000 Japanese women, done it, dude. Yeah, going crazy. But
that's funny.
The buildup for Kenta versus Yuji Nagata, this happened in 2013. So this is just a little bit before he gets signed on for NXT. Mm-hmm. Is Kenta is so cocky and, hey, there's nobody better than me. I'm the best that's ever lived. Like, I'm the best Noah champion. The GHC title's mine. Mora Fuji tried to take it from me. He did once, but then he never did again. Like, screw all you. And then Yuji Nagata was like, you need to learn some respect. That was the whole buildup. So Yuji Nagata is from back in the 80s, Antonio Inoki, like true King's Road strong style.
Right.
He would fist fight you. Like Yuji Nagata back in his younger days had no qualms with kicking you in the chest, like actually taking the wind out of you. So Kenta was famous for doing just hardcore strong style, just insane hard kicks and slaps and like, oh man, it's so brutal. The reason why I picked this match as my number five is it goes on for about 35 minutes and Kenta gets torn apart by Yuji Nagata. Absolutely decimated. Like Kenta is dry heaving at the 20 minute mark and then Yuji Nagata is barely breaking a sweat.
Wow.
Yeah, man. And I was like, the old boy still got it. Like, Yuji Nagata showed up to play, and he out-Kenta'd Kenta. And
that's awesome.
It's such a – it's violent, though. It's like, you look at it, and you're like, God, how are these guys standing up after this? But it's genius. And, like, the most recent Yuji Nagata, whenever we talked about that Global Wars UK thing, was him versus Trent Seven, and I loved that match. And I was like, oh, that match is great. And then I was like, wait, Yuji Nagata did a match with Kenta. And then I rewatched it recently. And I was like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Like, this is way better than I remember. So I'm good enough that it made my top five, like, ever. You know?
Okay.
But yeah, it's very stiff. It's definitely not for everyone. But it's one of those that once you know what these guys are capable of, and then they go out and they don't pull any punches. They literally don't pull any punches. It's awesome to see it. But then you know that Kenta will never work that stiff his entire life. Like he will never have to work that stiff again, being in NXT and WWE. Like he'll never have a fight like that ever again. So it was
everything
kind of this
he's doing now. Everything he's doing now is like soft pillows compared to
A paradise of beautiful like rest and like exactly. It's like those Serta commercials where he's counting sheep. He's I also picked it because it's kind of that send-off for Kenta doing Japanese style. And, like, who better than to get your ass whooped by Yuji Nagata? You know what I mean? Like, that's the forebear. It's like going over, you know, with Jushin Thunder Liger or something. Like, it's he's on that level of, you know, like, Yuji Nagata is royalty. So, like, to get your last strong style match through Yuji Nagata is pretty intense. So what would your number like four be? I know your list isn't exact, but
so you, as you were talking, like I was actually having a battle in my mind, so between these two matches. And so I think where I'm gonna go with number four is The Rock versus Hulk Hogan at
WrestleMania 18. Yes,
This one tells another same thing of a story. Hulk Hogan NWO is back. The Rock's not really doing much, I think, at that time. But I think everybody was having a dream booking match. I'm like, yeah, no, you know, The Rock has to go against Hulk Hogan. It would be such an awesome match. It's like, old lion versus the young one. And it's they have to go. And then they actually make the match. And the way they were telling the story, which is – by doing nothing, like the first time it was proposed, I think on Raw, like the crowd was just roaring already before they even had the match. So like the Rock proposed a challenge. Everybody's just yelling and roaring like, Rocky, whatever, or Hogan. And they proceed to do these 45-degree turns and they turn opposite. Yeah. And they turn opposite again. So you see that, and it's like, and and the crowd is just eating it up. So they do it again on the actual match where I think they were in, were they in Toronto? They were somewhere in Canada.
I think so, yeah.
So like it did the same thing and they were like perfectly synced and like head moving and they're just looking at the crowd and they're looking away from each other, but they're looking at the crowd. Everybody's just eating it up. They're just roaring at these two that like they can't believe that this match is actually happening. And so yeah, they're just that's they're telling the story like The Rock is saying like I can't be solidified as like a icon if I can't get past you, and because you were the guy back then,
right? Yes,
and you kind of still are, but you know your ways are like are not what they used to be. So that's like Rock's like a reason why to have this match. And I think Hulk Hogan is just like I still got it. I'm still the man.
Yeah, right.
Anybody can. Nobody can go get through me because I'm still going to be on top, type of thing. So yeah, again, they had the hell tilts. They're crowds eating it up, and they're actually going back and forth, and the crowd turns on The Rock.
Who was a
babyface, but because they were in Canada and there was a little bit after the whole Bret Hart being a bad guy thing and screw Bret type of thing. Mm-hmm. You get that different reaction than you would at the States, right? So
yes,
like
right,
they're cheering for Hulk Hogan, which he's supposed to be the heel and bad guy, but they're cheering for Hulk Hogan because Hulk Hogan is back in a WWE ring, first of all. And and so they're actually going back and forth. And at this point, as I was watching the match, I watched the match like fairly recently too. I think it was because the whole the WWE Network, WWE versus WCW Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, Monday Night Wars, right.
Yeah, so they're highlighting some of that stuff. And I believe I actually went back and actually saw the whole match. They were trading off with each other pretty evenly. They were going back and forth, and it was heading towards the finish. And funny enough, Hogan does a rock bottom. Everybody was right out at that.
Yep.
I'm like, what? Hogan knows new moves, but at the end of it, Rock won, but Hogan won the adulation of everybody because I think Hall and Nash were trying to butt in or something, or I think Hall and Nash were trying to interfere, but Hogan was like, "No, step off or stop it." Or they actually came to fight, like Hogan and Rock came to fight with Hall and Nash. Because they're interfering or something,
mm-hmm.
But that is just I guess the grand spectacle of it made me especially remember this match, and it was pretty much a dream booking match for me personally
because
I never thought Hogan would come back to the WWE, and then like Rock was my guy back then after Stone Cold, but Rock was my guy after Stone Cold, see that match was like a dream come true for me back in the day.
Yeah, man. And it's funny because I can't remember what special it was, but John Cena says that that's his favorite match of all time. Because he was like, you can watch this match two ways. And he was like, one way, it's maybe one of the worst in-ring matches you've ever seen. And the other way makes it the best match you've ever seen. He was like, first off, watch it on mute. And he was like,
Jericho said the same exact thing.
He was like, watch that match on mute and it's garbage. And he was like, but turn the volume on and crank it. And you're going to understand what the power of these two guys in the same place at the same time actually is.
Right.
That's where people bitch and moan about, oh, well, The Rock only had five moves and John Cena only has five moves. And it's like, who cares? You listen to that crowd, and I'm pretty sure they're having a pretty good time.
Exactly.
One of the loudest pops ever is that
that crowd made that match. Like you said, watch it on mute. It's just an okay match, but watch it with volume. The crowd adds to the intensity of the match and the immersion of that match. If you weren't even there, you were sucked in because
yes.
It's The Rock, and it's Hogan, and that crowd is just
and that's a perfect segue into my number four.
Okay, and go for it.
It's John Cena versus CM Punk at Money in the Bank 2011.
I barely remember this match.
This is where CM Punk became the mega pipe bomb superstar. He did the pipe bomb and it changed. That's what got me back into wrestling, was the CM Punk pipe bomb. The whole, this company would be better if Vince McMahon were dead. He could be a billionaire, but he's a millionaire because he's stupid with his money and has a bunch of glad handers. Like all this stuff that everyone's kind of thought, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then John Cena is like, hey, you're not going to disrespect my livelihood, that type of thing. And CM Punk's like, no, I'm going to get your belt. I'm going to win your championship. And my contract expires at midnight on the night of Money in the Bank. So I'm going to win the belt and I'm going to leave my hometown of Chicago the champion, and then I'm going to leave WWE. So that's what was at stake, is CM Punk's contract legit was expiring at midnight. So, and he had a lot of buzz, like after the whole pipe bomb, and people were like, who is this guy? What's he talking about?
Yeah, everybody was talking about it.
So, it's his hometown of Chicago. He comes out first. And I once again, like WrestleMania 18, I don't think I've ever heard a crowd that loud in my life. They treated him like a god. He walks out, and I will never forget it, because I watched this match maybe yesterday or like the day before, because I was like, I know this is on the list, but where does it need to be on the list? Is CM Punk's there, and he's in the ring by himself, and everyone's going crazy, CM Punk, super loud. Then the camera pans slowly over, and there's a guy over on the like on the big nosebleed seats in the rafters, and he pulls down this big giant like bed sheet, and it's a black bed sheet, and in yellow spray paint it says, if Cena wins, we riot. And I was like, oh shit, like Chicago might start setting shit on they might start like stabbing people if CM Punk loses. So it built this whole, like, if CM Punk doesn't win this match and Cena goes over in enemy territory, they're going to start setting cars on fire. Like, this is on a different level of, these fans are insane, and this is their boy, and they're doing Chicago proud. And I will say the genius thing about it, two amazing things that really sold this match. So John Cena's nickname is Big Match John, because he comes to play at WrestleManias. Any good major pay-per-view, he's on point. Like, I don't think after 2008 or 9, he's had a bad pay-per-view match. Really. Mm-hmm. Like, I may be wrong on the years, but like, there's a stint, and since that point until now, he has not had a bad pay-per-view match. It's just, they've all been money. But this is my favorite one of John Cena's, because normally he comes out and, hey, Cena Nation, I'm going to point at the camera and I'm going to show you the sweat towel and woo, we're going to do it. He walks out with his hat brim, like over his eyes. The crowd boo. I've never heard a crowd boo that loud in my life.
Yeah.
So John Cena walks out with his head covered and his head held down. And then he walks into the ring. He doesn't look at anybody. He doesn't say anything. And all he does, and oh my God, you could feel people's blood start to boil. He slowly raises up the championship belt over his head, like super slowly. As it gets further above his head, you could just tell these people are about to rip his head off. And you know what? You could just feel it. And I will say that this is the best commentating that JBL and Jerry the King Lawler and Michael Cole have ever done. Like, they never went off and did their silly jokes. They never went off topic. They literally did it like it was, like a Tyson fight. They were like, here's the critical parts about this match. CM Punk weighs this much. He's this tall. John Cena weighs this much. They started breaking it down like it was a prize fight.
Yeah.
And through the whole time, I mean, Chicago didn't lose any steam. They were on fire for 45 minutes. And then the ending is fine. They got a little hammy with the ending because they tried to recreate a Montreal Screwjob thing. But CM Punk ends up going over. He ends up winning. And that place, you would think, like, the cameras started shaking because the people's feet were rumbling the ground. And, like, it was shaking the arena. And then he does, CM Punk does the genius thing, and he does a blowy kiss to Vince McMahon and waves at him, and then runs into the crowd, and then the crowd are treating him like a god again. Like, it's, it is the crowd that makes that match. It's the fact that everything, they had the perfect storyline, because people thought it was real. They had the perfect audience, because it's hometown boy, your underdog is the hometown favorite. The actual announce team did their job. And they showed up, and they were calling moves the right thing. They were saying, oh, this is important because he has his ankle locked. And, you know, oh, John Cena's going after the knee. So how's CM Punk going to hit the go to sleep? Like, they were building up the fact that this leg thing may not look impressive, but just wait till later, which is what the announce team's supposed to do. But, yeah, I don't think there's been a match in WWE since then that has had that kind of perfect storm of, this feels like something special. Like, there's, I would be comfortable showing this to really anybody that would want to watch a wrestling match, because they're going to see the crowd and how crazy they are. And, they totally sold it. It's CM Punk versus John Cena, Money in the Bank 2011. The promo beforehand was genius, and then the whole match was as close to perfect as you can get for a WWE match.
Yeah, when Cena is not, like, I mean, I feel like everywhere back, like maybe a few years ago, wherever Cena went, like he was like the forced like heel because nobody liked him and so and so. So like when he went to Chicago and and his demeanor was different from what he usually is.
Yes.
I thought that was like perfect for a champion that's not being rooted for. Like, it's like, I'm the champ. Fuck y'all. I'm in the champ. Like Ali type of thing.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I don't have to acknowledge any of you guys. I'm going to be here to beat who you deemed as like the people's champion. And then I'm going to walk out.
Yeah. It's a paycheck.
Walk out. Yeah.
Exactly. You come at me. So, if you come at the king, you best not miss. And then,
exactly.
The best thing was there was a small smidgen, and it was great because the match was so good. About 25 minutes into the match, the crowd started kind of chanting for John Cena too, because they saw how good this match was going. But the best thing about it is Cena hits two F5s back to back and gets like a 2 7/8 count, like as close to a three count as you can get, and he doesn't get it. And then John Cena does this perfect little glimmer of a heel turn, because he starts laughing. And he gets up and he looks at the ref and he's like, are you serious right now? Like, that was a three count. Yeah. That was a three count. And then the ref's like, no. John Cena pushes the ref into the corner and he's like, no, you didn't hear me. That was a three count. Like, and then you see the crowd going like, oh shit, is this a Cena heel turn? Like, what's about to happen right now?
They're feeding into it. They're like, oh, okay.
Yep. Cena played it perfect. And then what was great is then the announce team was like, you know, oh, Cena's not focused. He's getting unfocused. He can't give CM Punk the benefit of the doubt. Like, he's not paying attention to Punk. Oh, Punk gets up. Oh, he hits him with a, you know, like whole, they really play that up. And I was like, God, if only announce teams would do that all the time, we would have some money matches always.
Right.
But yeah, that's my number four. Number four for sure.
Number four. So, okay. For number three for me, so now like as we're going through the list, now I'm having battles. Like I just said before, I'm having battles now. So like in my thought process right now, I'm debating what's going to be number two. So I would say, okay, so I got to make a decision right now. I'd say, okay, so number three would have to be, and I can't believe I would pick this over the other one. So my number three would be, I am wrestling right now. I'm literally wrestling right now. Okay. So my number three would be Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart, Iron Man match.
Oh, yeah.
Because as you were just saying, as having a big fight feel, that was the first one for me that had a big fight feel.
Yes.
Because they were talking about it as a big fight. From the contract signing to... Just watching each other's like matches from a friendly competitive standpoint, as you know, for every like Monday Night Raw or whatever they were at, watching each other's matches. So they were playing it up like a big match. Like Shawn Michaels was the underdog and Bret Hart was the solidified champion. And like, you know, you see Shawn Michaels' vignettes is him training. Same thing for Bret Hart. And come to the match, it's a, that match, I personally can't find a weak point in that match. Like, yeah, they had it down. They called it to a T in that match. Like, from seconds of calling, okay, so in this, and from like 30 seconds to 45 seconds, we're going to do this, or yes, we're going to time it to do this. They had it down, even though they didn't like each other, you know, or this is what the start with, where they started to not like each other. They had it, they just had timing down perfect. Yep. And they just showcased each other's skills. And I was watching highlights of it and I didn't realize that Bret Hart did like a suicide dive through like the third and second rope. I was like, oh geez, I forgot he did that before, or he did that in that match. Yep. Cause that was more Lucha Libre style, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot that Bret actually did that. And so, yeah, it was, for me to call it number three has to say something, because that was a perfect match.
Yeah, personally. Right. And it's right? Funny that you said they had the timing down to a T, because there's a documentary called like Rivalries, and there's one about Bret yeah. Hart versus Shawn Michaels, and they talk about it.
Yeah,
they talk about it in a roundtable, and legit, like, you're not kidding. They had everything timed out, and he was like, during the match, we were there, and it felt good, and we felt pretty right, and he was like, I know for a fact. One of the spots, and this was Bret Hart saying this, Bret was like, well, I know for a fact that we had it that at the 5 minute point, I would go up on the top rope and I would do like a pump handle, an axe handle or something. And then he would counter it. And like, so he was like, I was getting on to the second rope and I glanced up at the clock and it said 4 minutes and 57 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, like over an hour match and you had it down to the minute. Like to the exactly. second, like to the exactly. second,
to have it down at that timing, and just look up the clock, and you're maybe off a few seconds, but you're like that close. That's
crazy.
That close. That exact time.
Yeah, that's unreal. Unreal.
Yeah.
What was that? WrestleMania 10?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Oh no, because
it may have been 10. May have been. I don't know.
No, because WrestleMania 10 was the Razor Ramon ladder match.
Okay.
With Shawn, so right?
It would have to have been like 13.
I thought 13 was the Stone Cold versus Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson as a guest referee.
So that would have to have been like what, 11 or 12?
Maybe. So 11. Yeah. Oh crap, when was that? Because yeah, like we, and by the way, while I look this up, we do recommend everybody get the WWE Network simply because right. you can right. pull up this stuff on demand, like whenever you want to watch it. God, I think we've each done two or three, you've done three and I've done two, out of five yeah. that we've recommended, I think four of them have been WWE matches. So, mm-hmm. yeah. you know, this is some good stuff. Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart Iron Man match. It would be at 12. Okay, so WrestleMania 12.
12.
Yeah. So 13 was Mike Tyson as the guest referee with Shawn Michaels versus Stone Cold. But yeah, so it was 12.
That's a huge jump from 12 to 13.
Yeah. Right? That whole business changed real quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a genius. Because yeah, I would say out of all of the ones that we have talked about so far, that is the closest to a perfect actual technical wrestling match. Like down to the yeah. They're consummate professionals. They had it down to the second. Mm-hmm. They were both guys that like to plan stuff ahead of time. They didn't at the time. Shawn didn't like to call stuff in the ring. He wanted mm-hmm. to know what was going yeah. on because he was kind of cocky and he wanted to know he wasn't getting shafted.
Right.
Yeah, he wanted to know ahead of time, so they planned it out to the second, and they nailed it. So my my number three is a match that I think I've talked a little bit about before, and I think I maybe sent it to you like a Daily Motion video or something.
Kenta versus Joe?
Not Kenta versus Joe. It was was a Kenta match. So on the right track. You'll see Kenta versus Bryan Danielson, or you know, WWE as Daniel Bryan. And this was at Ring of Honor, Glory by Honor, 5 Night 2. This was back in 2006. So this is right whenever the storyline leading up to this was Kenta just became the most dangerous like super junior in the world. Like, he was the guy that people were like, Kenta's going to mess you up. Like, yeah, people were like kind of scared of this guy. And then Bryan Danielson in Ring of Honor had beaten everybody. He beat everybody. He beat Nigel McGuinness. He beat Tyler Black, who is now Seth Rollins. He beat Samoa Joe. He beat Delirious. Like, there are a lot of these big, like Christopher Daniels. So these are big names now. And he was running the floor with Ring of Honor. And he was kind of who's going to stop Bryan Danielson? And then they get the call that Kenta called him out. And then it's like, oh shit. So basically they had a deal, New Japan or Pro Wrestling Noah. I'm sorry. Pro Wrestling Noah and Ring of Honor had a deal to where, okay, the Noah guys would come over and they would do some matches and all that stuff. Kind of the same thing with Global Wars, where New Japan Pro Wrestling and Revolution Pro just had a partnership this year. So right. It was one of those back in 2006, and there were like mixed tag matches. And the mixed tag match during night one was a mixed tag, and I think it was all Ring of Honor guys. So it was like Bryan Danielson, Samoa Joe, and maybe McGuinness versus Kenta and like two other Japanese guys, maybe like Morifuji and somebody else. So the ending of that was Kenta hit the go to sleep on Daniel Bryan. And then it like knocked him out and he was out of the match. So then they were like, oh, well, if Kenta was the only person to knock out, then he needs to get a title shot. You know what I mean? So now you got this undefeated champion of Daniel Bryan against the assassin of Kenta.
Right.
And so perfect money match. And it is the best Ring of Honor match ever. Like, Ring of Honor was already good. You got guys like Christopher Daniels. You had AJ. You had all these guys that were part of Ring of Honor, and they had some killer matches. But Bryan Danielson versus Kenta at Glory by Honor 5 Night 2, the best match Ring of Honor's ever put on. It was, you could tell they were doing the new style of pro wrestling. It was hard. It was hitting heavy, all this other stuff. But it was mixing MMA holds. It was doing stuff a little bit more dynamic than the old, really like Ric Flair, Harley Race, but it wasn't quite the, you know, we have like King Ricochet and Will Ospreay now who do the backflips and the stuff. So it was kind of in between these two things. It was very fast. It was, exactly. It was this kind of, in my opinion, kind of what I want a wrestling match to be. I want these guys to be able to be bona fide athletes. But I also want their hits to look like they hurt. Like, I want them to be like, oh, God, you put me in a headlock and now I can't breathe. Like, I want that sort of reality in my wrestling, even though it's all predetermined and fake and whatever you want to call it. I want that suspension of disbelief. Like, he's been getting the shit kicked out of him. How's he going to come back from this? And that's what this match was for, like, 42 minutes. Or something.
Wow.
So they went for a while, but this is both guys in their prime. You have Kenta, one of the best Japanese wrestlers to ever live, versus Daniel Bryan, one of the best American wrestlers to ever live. And this is them at their peak. Like, this is back when they were just baller. So it's the best of the best when it comes to the two of the best wrestlers to ever do it. It's kind of like the whole, it's kind of a natural transition from the Shawn and Brett, because those are two guys that are genius. I mean, Those guys were bona fide Hall of Fame before they even had the Iron Man match, you know? And then they go out and then they killed it. They just cemented their legacy. And I think that's what this Bryan Danielson versus Kenta match was. But yeah, 2006. So 10 years ago is when this happened.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
They looked like young pups, man. Like Daniel Bryan still had the William Regal red shorts and boots and stuff. And they were actually William Regal's. They really belonged to William Regal and he passed them down to him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, he was still rocking that with the shaved head and no beard look. So he looked super young. And then Kenta has his long Japanese mullet and his wispy mustache because he can't grow it yet. Like it's great. I want to say they're both in their early 20s. But yeah, it's like wrestling in their prime. But yeah, so that's my number three.
Okay. All right. So my number two. I think, I made a solid decision on my number two.
Yeah.
It's actually two matches. And because as I was battling, as we're mid-talking.
Yeah.
So my number two is two matches because I couldn't pick between either two because both of these matches showcase style versus style.
Mm-hmm.
As well as like the trade-off wrestling that we usually see, right? So one of them is I want to say it was Tajiri versus Super Crazy.
Oh man.
Yeah. So that's the first that's one of the two, right? The Jerry versus Super Crazy, and the other one is Jerry Lynn versus this Japanese wrestler that I don't remember who it is. He faced a Japanese wrestler, and his notable move that I remember was the roaring elbow, right? So I don't remember the guy's name, and
let me find it because I could tell you. So the Super Crazy Tajiri match that I remember is from 1997, and it's from November to Remember, the ECW pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So if people want to look it up, that's the one that is that the one where they start doing stuff on the outside of the ring where they have the walk-up ramp and like they start doing the crazy shit out there?
Possibly. But the reason why I picked that match is because I was a little familiar with Lucha Libre because maybe I would catch it at a Mexican channel here and there, and they would it's wrestling, that's awesome, but I can't understand what they're saying, but I'll at least watch the wrestling, right? So I'm at least a little familiar with Lucha Libre. While this is my very first time watching Strong Style, and it was and it was Tajiri, right?
Yeah.
And plus, as I was watching WCW back then too, I wasn't correlating that whatever Japanese wrestler was there was doing actual Strong Style. I was like, I just thought like, oh, cool, they're doing kicks and
the buzzsaw,
and they're hitting hard, and that's it, right? But with Tajiri versus Super Crazy, I saw like a distinct difference between how Super Crazy was flying around doing flips and all that stuff, head scissors and everything, while Tajiri was kind of matching the same, but also doing nothing and doing things different than what Lucha Libre was showing, right? Plus with doing kicks and unique submission holds and like the tarantula submission and all that stuff. Yeah,
that's still one of the coolest things I've seen in my entire life. Like I still mark out every time because I think Tajiri signed a deal with 205 Live to be on the Cruiserweight show. I just I want to see him do a tarantula every single week. Like that, I will tune in live just to watch him be like, yeah, that's the only movie he even has to do. He could be in a suit and just run in and just like do it. And then it's done. And I'd be way happy. You know what I mean? Cause I think it's funny now that you mention that, because I think Tajiri may have been my first, true. Like I think I dig Japanese wrestling. because mm-hmm. of Tajiri, because he had a good mix. He had the kicks, but he also had the mist from the Great Muta. Mm-hmm. So he yeah. brought in a lot of these traditional Japanese wrestling mechanics, I guess. And yeah, now that I think about it, he might be the guy. He might have been the gatekeeper as far as that. I think it would be him and then the tag team of Taka Michinoku and Funaki. So
that,
I think they...
I didn't correlate it as strong style. When
right. Yeah. That's yeah. interesting. So, I'm looking up Jerry Lynn right now because now I'm curious.
Okay.
I did not know this. Funny thing about Jerry Lynn, he actually did go to wrestle in New Japan Pro Wrestling as Mr. JL. That was his name, Mr. Okay. JL in New Japan.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So apparently he had such good matches, New Japan wanted to sign him for a while. And it looks like he worked for Michinoku Pro Wrestling. He did some Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So let me see. Best of the Super Juniors.
So the match I was talking about, transitioning to the Jerry Lynn match, this was in ECW, and I just don't remember that guy's name because this is a long time ago, and I never seen that guy back since. So the guy, Jerry Lynn versus this Japanese wrestler, again, it's pretty much a mix. This one is like not so much of style versus style, but it was like athlete versus not foreigner, but like athlete versus I don't know who this guy is, so I'm going to just watch what he can do, right?
A wild card,
A wild card, exactly. So I've seen matches with Jerry Lynn and RVD, and that was about to be... That's like basically an honorable mention. Jerry Lynn versus RVD, that's also a good trade-off.
Jerry Lynn can
do better than you can.
Yeah, he breaks his face on the outside of the... One of the nastiest bumps I've ever seen. Jerry Lynn takes a... what was it? The Van Terminator kick or something? Or Van Damme jumps off the second rope and like drop kicks Jerry Lynn, who's sitting on the turnbuckle. So Jerry Lynn goes to do the back tumble like off to the mat, but his leg gets caught and he's turning to try to catch himself and he can't. And then he literally face plants into the concrete, busts the shit out of his face. Like it broke his nose. He said it broke it, part of his jaw. And then he finished the match. Like what?
And he still finished the match.
You couldn't pay me enough. Like, holy crap. But Jerry Lynn's a tough dude, man.
Man.
Let's see. Because all I'm seeing about ECW is that exact Rob Van Dam match. They're like, "Oh, that match!"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah, it's a good one."
Everybody's talking about that match. I know that's a good match, but I'm talking about this other one. But it was just the reason why I chose this as my part two of my number two is, they were just going back and forth with each other, and I was actually surprised by the Japanese wrestler. I really wish I could remember this guy's name, but he had a signature move called a roaring elbow, and like, it's that quick hit you finish type of thing. So he would throw it like from like all these different, not only angles, but like from out of nowhere type of thing, like RKO or like a sweet chin music. And they were trading off. And I was very surprised that I would see this type of competitive wrestling in ECW when the stigma was like, it was just all hardcore matches, throwing chairs, lighting things on fire.
Yeah, garbage thumbtacks, wrestling.
Garbage, Sandman, busting his head open with,
fucking with Sandman.
Beer cans.
Sandman, by the way, is both of our number one picks for what a mess.
Or New Jack. New Jack. I know.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, because New Jack actually murdered a guy in the ring. So, and that's not a work. That actually fucking happened.
So it's... For my number two, it had to be two ECW matches, and it was...
Oh, that's fair, dude. And the whole Tajiri versus Super Crazy, that is one of the... Like, if they make another Rivalries DVD, man, they got to put all of those matches. Because there's another... This is kind of going off, but the other big ECW rivalry, that it was such a shit show, I couldn't help but, like, watch it all the time, was Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka. Because...
Okay,
you would know these matches because they would do the like life endangering thing of doing a power bomb from the fucking top of the like ropes to the outside of the ring on the concrete. Oh my god, like these guys were trying to kill each other. Like, I would see a guy die. Like, this, these are going to be the two people.
Yeah.
But then Masato Tanaka, because that's who I thought of at first. I was like, well, Masato Tanaka did a roaring elbow, but Masato Tanaka also bled like a fucking stuck pig every single match. It didn't matter what the match was. He could be like, he could go out there to sign a contract and he would just start bleeding everywhere. And you're like, this guy, man, like, he needs to calm down. But yeah, the whole Masato Tanaka Mike Awesome stuff, it was so stupid. But like, looking back on it now, I was way into it as a kid, but I look back now and I'm
sure,
like,
for sure.
No wonder these guys,
the extremeness of it.
Yeah, like, no wonder these guys didn't work with anybody else, because everyone was fucking afraid of them because they were trying to hurt each other. Like, right? I wouldn't want to work with them either.
No, dude.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so my number two, I think, is actually, as far as definitely for WWE, my number two, it's the best storytelling I've ever seen. And it's weird because this could be my number one favorite match. But me being who I am, it had to be some weird Japanese match as number one. But my number two match is the second Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels match at WrestleMania, where it was the career versus the streak.
Right.
That was and the great thing about this build up is at WrestleMania 25 they had their first match, the Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker match. And it was the whole heaven versus hell match. That's what they called it. Mm-hmm. So you had this, you know, the Undertaker who came out like hellfire and brimstone. And then you had Shawn Michaels where he was wearing the all white and he came down from the rafters. And like, so it was this whole heaven versus hell thing. And everyone was like, yeah, this is going to be a decent match, whatever. And then it ended up stealing the show. Like, it was like these two guys still got it. Holy shit. That was perfect. Like, that was amazing. And technically, I think the first match they had is better than the second.
But I
But the second match had way better build because Shawn Michaels lost the first match. And then for a whole year, they did a storyline to where Shawn Michaels wasn't focusing. He wasn't focusing in tag matches with Triple H because this is during the era where the DX came back.
Right.
He wasn't himself. And like 3 or 4 months in, Triple H is like, dude, what's the matter with you? Like,
yeah, he had to go Undertaker, right? Just to accept the challenge.
Yes. So basically, he was like, I messed up one thing on the Undertaker match, and I went for a moonsault, and he caught me and tombstoned me, and I lost. Mm-hmm. And I dream about that every night because I could have beaten the streak. And he was like, Undertaker, I challenge you for one more match. And then Undertaker's no show. You know, he doesn't come out. There's no gong, nothing. For months, nothing. And then at the end of it, he's like, oh, yeah, Undertaker's too much of a wuss. He knew how close I was to beating him, all this other stuff. And then he was like, here's the thing, Undertaker. If you accept my challenge, you put your streak on the line. I put my career on the line. If I lose, I don't wrestle ever again. Then it goes dark. You hear the gong. He comes out and he says, I want to take your career, so I accept. I'm like, God, this is like a 25-year-long storyline, essentially. You know what I mean? Because of how good, exactly, like, hell, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels, like Iron Man match. That is a perfect wrestling match. So here's a guy that is, I mean, I think he's the greatest wrestler that's ever lived, Shawn Michaels. He had everything. He could play the characters. He had the humor. He could really do work. He was a dick for the first half of his career.
Right.
But he's probably the best that's ever lived because he had everything. He didn't, like, he started off good. Like, even him with Marty Jannetty, he started a little green, but then he got real good real fast. You know, like WrestleMania 6, he was awesome. You know what I mean? Like, he was awesome early.
Exactly.
So he, and then he kept getting better and he kept getting better. And then that Undertaker match, the first one, that was the best match he's ever had besides the Iron Man match. And I was like, oh my God, he's even better now. Like this guy gets better with age.
After taking a break, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This dude's like 50 and he's still killing it. He's still doing it better than anybody. And then, but then he's like, if I can't beat you, I have no career. I was like, oh shit. Like, it put this whole big, heavy...
Back then, that means nothing if I can't beat you, right?
Yes. And you're like, oh, man. Because, okay, so there it is. It's like, okay, Sean's not going to retire. He's better than he's ever been. But Taker's not going to lose because it's the streak. Mm-hmm. You know, this is back whenever the streak was still sacred. And so you're like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen. And they come out and they go balls to the wall, man. And I'm talking like moonsaults across the freaking ring to go and announce tables and just table, nonsense. Yeah. You're like, these guys are, they're like, they may not be able to walk out of here. It goes on forever. I mean, this match, and it's the one match, because normally I'm not a big fan of false finishes. I think, after you do two or three finishers, someone just should get pinned and it should be over. But they probably went through 18 of each other's finishers.
They went on
forever. And like, but the crowd didn't get tired. Like, it got more and more because you didn't want it to end. You're like, someone's about to lose something very important. Either a guy's about to lose his career or a guy's about to lose his like 15 or 20 year long streak of being undefeated. So there are actual stakes at this point.
I think false finishes only work with Undertaker streak matches.
That's what I only think.
Yeah. Any other match, like in the card doing false finishes for that much is like, that doesn't work. But if it's an Undertaker streak match, yes, it works.
Because that's a whole career.
You don't know.
I mean, that is his career in a sense. Right. And so, it was basically the thing that defines your career versus your actual career. So there was this heavy stake with it, and it's two of the best that's ever done it. And I'm a huge Undertaker fan, always have been. I even wanted to put the whole Mick Foley Undertaker Hell in a Cell match on my list, but like it's not a very good match. Like it's not very good, but it doesn't matter because Mick Foley got thrown off the freaking cage and then he went through it on accident. Like crazy.
Right.
Just, it was mad. It was a train wreck. The whole thing was a train wreck, but it's shocking enough that you have to see it. The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels 2. And I think it's because they had that year long build of, I was so close to beating you. The streak means everything to you, so I want to take it. And then he's like, well, if that's the case, then I want your career. So that kind of heavy stakes can very rarely get done in pro wrestling anymore because belts change hands all the time. And, you know, like there's no big moments like that. I know New Day just won the longest reigning tag team champions ever. They beat out Demolition, which is kind of a big deal. Like, that's pretty good.
It is actually a big deal.
Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels 2. Really, either one. Awesome. But I think number two is my go-to just because of that, what the ending was and how it all worked together. And that crowd was way into it, you know?
Okay.
So your number, we are at the number one. We are at, this is the cream of the crop. Like for both of us, this is, if you could jot down these matches, if you've been following along the whole episode, but if there are two matches you have to watch, it's these next two that we're going to talk about.
So my number one match is actually fairly recently. Funny enough, Wes introduced me to this match. I think you have an idea what it is. Wes introduced me to this match, introduced me to one of the people because he had such a cool gimmick name, right? And I didn't know the other person at all. Never know. And at this point, I'm like, I think I've seen everything I needed to see in wrestling. Like nothing can wow and surprise me.
Yeah.
Until I saw Wrestle Kingdom 10. Or was it 9? All right. So the match I'm talking about, that's my number one, is Kota Ibushi versus Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yes. That was actually on my list. And it was between, do I want to put that as my number like 5? Or is it Kenta versus Yuji Nagata? You know what I mean? Yeah. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And I had a feeling you were going to put up an Ibushi match. So I was like, I'm going to give Marco that. But dude, holy shit. Like, that should be mandatory watch.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
Unreal. And you can watch it with the Japanese commentary. You can watch it with the Jim Ross commentary. Doesn't matter. But go ahead.
That was 9, huh?
Yes, Wrestle Kingdom 9.
Okay, yeah. So that was 9. Okay, yeah. I was a little confused at first, but yeah, Wrestle Kingdom 9. Never watched, or this is my reintroduction into like strong style wrestling. Because compared to what I saw of like Tajiri back then to now, like I really don't know. I don't know again what strong style is until I saw Wrestle Kingdom 9 and I saw that entire pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't have any plans of watching Wrestle Kingdom 9. Wes, I think, goes on Twitter saying, and I think everybody else that the wrestling pages and you were saying, you need to watch Wrestle Kingdom 9. And I didn't know what the big deal was.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, if I can find a way to watch it, I will. And so I do watch it, right? And Wes starts hyping up this match, particularly of Shinsuke Nakamura, because his gimmick name is the King of Strong Style. Hearing that Strong Style is the Japanese style of wrestling and you're the king of it, I'm interested of what this, who this person is, who this guy Shinsuke Nakamura is, and why is he called the King of Strong Style.
Yeah.
So I'm already intrigued. So I come in watching this match. I see like the vignette of it, like Shinsuke, I guess like Shinsuke is like a heel at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think he's like on the microphone. It's like, yeah, man, like nobody's able to beat me. I had this IC belt for, like, he had it for a good long time.
A few years, yeah, I want to say.
Yeah, he had it good for a good long time. And it's an IC belt, not the world championship belt. He is rocking out the IC belt, which is awesome because it's like, I relay it to like how Ultimate Warrior kind of up the level of the Intercontinental Championship belt.
Yeah.
Against the heavyweight championship belt. So
right. Yeah.
So Shinsuke was on that level or even more so than the Ultimate Warrior of just upping the prestige of the IC belt. I'm like, okay, that's awesome, right? So I guess he's talking smack. He's like, yeah, nobody's able to beat me. And then he brings out he calls out Kota Ibushi. Was he with Noah at that time? And then he jumped?
Was
he with New Japan?
I think he was with New Japan at that point, but he came from DDT. So he came from DDT Pro, okay. Which is a joke. Like, it's an actual joke promotion. So it's like how we here in the States, we have a promotion called Chikara, which is like just goofy Colonel Sanders shit all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
but yeah, so he comes from DDT, but Kota Ibushi's like the guy. Like, people are like, yeah, all these jokes and whatever, and he's shooting fireworks out of his butt or whatever he was doing. Mm-hmm. But this guy is actually super talented. The gimmick of Kenny Omega got over. But anyway.
Right. So he's calling out Kota Ibushi, and I think the thing was like Kota Ibushi came out of nowhere. I want to say like he dragon suplexes him, or like he half Nelson suplexes him,
or snap German suplex or something like that.
Snap German or something like that. So like it shocks him, and you know, Kota Ibushi is like riding high. He's like, yeah, you know, I can beat you and all that stuff. So he comes to have this match, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm gonna like the Shinsuke Nakamura guy. Never saw whatsoever a Kota Ibushi match until this match right here. I was astounded of like the level of like physicality of like the strikes that they were doing, the type of holds and maneuvers they were doing. Like, I know nothing of Kota Ibushi at this point, but I'm literally astounded by this guy because he's flying around. He did a triangle moonsault. I literally never seen a triangle moonsault until Kota Ibushi. The other stuff that he was doing, and then mid-match almost turned into an actual fight because...
Oh, yeah, it did.
Who was it? Shinsuke was like doing that, not a stomp, but like you slide your heel or your foot into their face, kind of like a burn rub type of thing.
Oh, yeah, they call it good vibrations in
good vibrations?
NXT. But yeah, I can't remember what the name of it was, but his gimmick, his shake the rope, yeah,
it wasn't actually that one, but just like taunting him, like, "Hey, come on, get right. up!"
Kind of what Sami Zayn did it to him. Whenever he came to NXT, yeah, sort of the I guess it's called the rub. where you're like put your heel and then just grind it across her cheek or something.
Yeah.
You're so like ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's doing it a lot of times. And then I think it was Kota, like he kind of snapped and then he started, I think they did throw a little bit.
That, yeah.
And then they cut, and then they switch it back. Like, okay. We got to continue this match. Like that small moment of this just turned real. They're throwing.
Yes.
They're throwing bows at each other. Like, oh, and then go back. Like, okay. Let's calm down. I mean, other than like how hard they were striking.
Smoother heads down, prevail. But, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's,
yeah. So they continued the match and never again. And then I never saw Shinsuke Nakamura's like finisher. Just how fast that thing is. Like, I feel like that's literally, now I'm battling. Like, I don't know if it's as fast or faster than Sweet Chin Music from like out of nowhere. Like, it comes out pretty freaking fast and it can come out of nowhere.
Right. So,
like,
yes.
That intensity was getting me. And I was like, my jaw was dropped because I thought at this point, I saw everything I've seen in professional wrestling. Until I saw this match, Strong Style, like personified Strong Style between two guys. And people on the internet was like, rooting for Nakamura all the way. I was like, dude, but no, Kota Ibushi.
Yeah.
Man, no, Kota, I'm a fan of this guy. I like it. Nakamura, but like, dude, Kota Ibushi, mm-hmm. I'm in Terrace House Inn.
I'm totally, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm all stock for Kota Ibushi. So like, that's why I pick it as my number one, and I've been like a fan of Kota Ibushi since.
Oh yeah.
And now I'm hoping to find out where he jumps out next, wherever it is.
He's doing hilarious stuff now. He's doing, I can't remember what it is. I'll go find it and retweet it so you can see it. But now, so one of the journalists said, like, Kota Ibushi did not sign to NXT because he would rather do this. And then it shows a little video of him riding a little girl's bicycle down the ramp. And he, like, jumps and drop kicks off of it. And I was like, what a hero. Like, that dude's a badass. Yeah. Like, let him do whatever he wants to do. Like, screw it.
That's awesome.
My favorite bump of that whole match, and there's a lot of them, is Kota Ibushi is standing on, like, so Shinsuke Nakamura is outside of the ring on the apron, and he's like climbing up onto the apron, and Kota Ibushi is on the second rope on the turnbuckle, reaches over, like bends all the way down basically to grab Nakamura. And I don't know how in the hell he did this, but even JR, because I watched it with the English commentary first,
I did too. Yeah.
JR went crazy on this. Is Kota Ibushi grabbed Shinsuke and deadlifted him up completely into the ring, up over the turnbuckle, and did a superplex. And I'm like,
Cesaro.
Yes. And this is this was like an impromptu off the cuff. They didn't situate it, they didn't plan for it. He just grabbed him and yanked him all the like. That's a 210-pound deadlift from like position. And even the cameraman wasn't ready for it. So in this amazing like Guy Ritchie moment of directing, the cameraman tried to put the camera on his shoulder, like on the cameraman's shoulder. He tried to get it centered up again, but the camera tipped at the same time that they started doing the suplex. So it's this cool moment of like the cameraman almost like got dizzy.
Followed it
and with JR screaming his head off, he's like, that's the damnedest thing I've ever seen in my life. Because and you're like, oh, this is magic. Like you could tell that whole match, once again, that there was just this aura in the air, and the further it got and the more violent they got, and you're like, oh man, like these guys are on another level. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of both of them. And I love the fact that, you know, Nakamura's in NXT. He's having a really good rivalry with Joe right now. But I kind of do miss New Japan Invincible Shinsuke Nakamura, to where he went up against AJ Styles. He went up against Okada. He went up against Ibushi. He went up against, like, everybody. And he beat him. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I have that big affinity for Kenta because he was an assassin. Shinsuke was too, with that freaking knee, and he would hit a hard knee. Like,
yeah, those, hard those enough New that, Japan knees are have nothing on. I mean, the NXT knees now.
Yeah. Oh, nothing on.
The Kinshasa or Kinshasa or knee.
Yeah.
Kinshasa knee has nothing on the Bombay knee.
The Bombay and the oh, he would hit it so bad, like people's shoulder blades would click together.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
their neck would like they looked like an ostrich. Like their neck would like elongate out and their head would whiplash back and you're like, oh God. Like it was just brutal. It was absolutely brutal to see. And he would, like you said, he would hit it out of nowhere. So it's like you knew that was a real bump because you couldn't prepare for it. You didn't know, oh, he's gonna tune up the band. There's none of that. He just ran at you and kneed you in the face. Like he just hit you hard. It was like it was almost like a Shining Wizard, which a Shining Wizard is something that they did in the 90s that I don't see a lot anymore. But it's one of my favorite moves because it's sort of a mix between the Bomaye and the Kenta High Knee. But you do it while the person's sitting or like they're kneeling because you run up their knee.
In a kneel position.
And then and then you like drag across with your leg. And it just, it looks basically it's a knee strike, but with your shin. But yeah, I love the Shining Wizard, but hilarious that your number one was a Japanese match because my number one is a Japanese match. And this is why
I actually want to give like a little side trivia of, because I like with, Nakamura, the thing that I like about Nakamura's special is because it's referenced to Ali, Bombaye came from Ali Bombaye, right? And then the Kinshasa, it has something to do with Ali as well. I think it might have been maybe a Japanese translation of like something of Ali, but it basically his special move is a reference to Muhammad Ali, and I thought that was like
that's,
super cool.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Bombaye knee, the Bombaye knee is literally from Ali Bombaye.
That's so cool.
Okay, so yeah, go ahead. What's your number one?
So my number one, and it's a match I'm going to put on YouTube, or that's already on YouTube. I'm probably going to put it in the show notes. Hopefully we can find that Wrestle Kingdom 9 one. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because I want to embed. I want to embed both of our number ones. That way people don't have to go far. They can just watch the matches there. You know what I mean? Like on comedyhobo.com. Go look at the show notes. I'll post them up. I'll try my best to find a good Wrestle Kingdom 9 one. So my number one match of all time, and I remember the first time I saw this match was probably, let's see, what is it now? 2016. I'm 30. I'll be 31 in January. 2008, I think. So a while ago was the first time I saw it, but it's what introduced me to Japanese style wrestling.
Okay.
And it's funny that I watched this first because there's not been a better Japanese style match ever, in my opinion, from the first one I saw. And it's Mitsuharu Misawa versus Kenta Kobashi. And it's from the Pro Wrestling Noah GHC Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
And it was, they've had matches for 25 years, but my favorite one they ever did was in 2003. So, yeah, I probably saw it 2008 or so. Insane. Like, here are the two people that kind of solidified Japanese wrestling all over the world. Because I want to say Mitsuharu Misawa was Tiger Mask 2. Sayama was number 1, and I think Mitsuharu Misawa was number 2. I want to say Kenta Kobashi was Tiger Mask 3. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I need to do the fact check on that. But, like, I want to say these guys were both Tiger Mask.
Literally the Tiger Den match.
Yeah. Like, this is it. And we know, because even with Wrestle Kingdom 9, the Japanese wrestling audience is way different than the American audience.
By far leagues.
They start off, they start off very quiet. They do the respectful claps. They throw the streamers to show their support whenever people are called, like, oh, in this corner, so-and-so, and then they throw the streamers. Really cool corner. Look. Do what?
I said, owl corner. That's what they're
saying. Devitu.
Yeah.
So they have the streamers are very subdued, but what they do a lot is they go like, oh, they'll do these big crowd reactions, but they're very like, oh, oh,
yeah,
oh. Yeah. This match, this Japanese crowd was like an Attitude Era crowd.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, man. I have never seen anything like this in my life. They were screaming. They're Kobashi! Like, they were out of their mind.
Nice. Right?
So here's two guys that are at, like, they are, imagine if you had Ric Flair versus Ric Flair in NWA. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, just ridiculous. Like, these are the guys that the whole, like, King's Road and Strong Style and anything Japanese wrestling had to go through Mitsuhara Misawa and Kenta Kobashi, because they were actually taught by Antonio Inoki and Giant Baba, yeah, who are literally the creators of it. So these are the two golden children, basically, of Japanese wrestling. And
that's awesome, yeah.
It is wild. And it has the sickest bump I've seen in my entire life. And I'm talking that Hell in a Cell fall. I'm talking like Jerry Lynn busting his face. So I'll tell you what it is. And me saying it won't do it justice, but there is a part, and you have to keep in mind, this is 35 minutes into the match. Both of these guys are exhausted. They have been trading blows hard enough that they have broken blood on both of their chests. okay. They are just fighting at this point. And then they go outside, in the Japanese style stage, the stage goes all the way to the ring. So instead of it being a walk ramp, and then like it goes, and then you have a barricade and the little padding on the outside and stuff, it's just pure concrete, but the actual platform is the same height as the ring, and they just connect it. So it's like a big T-shaped thing, or like if you've ever gone to a concert and there's a big bevel part in the middle where it sticks out into the crowd, and then like someone goes and plays a guitar or something, it's that type of thing. Yeah. So it's an actual ramp to where it's elevated probably 4.5 to 5 feet off the ground, but it's for the safety of the fans, so all the fans can see it. To keep them away from all the stuff. So there is a part in this match where they go outside and Mitsuhara Misawa grabs Kenta Kobashi and does a German suplex off of that ramp.
Okay.
And like onto the concrete. So they do a German suplex.
Okay.
And it comes out of nowhere. Kenta Kobashi lands directly on his head. And Kenta Kobashi at the time is 260 pounds.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
This could kill him. Like, and that's not an exaggeration. That's not hyperbole. Like, Mitsuhara Misawa grabs him for this German suplex and does it. And this crowd goes ape shit. Like, they thought they witnessed a murder. Like, this is 40 minutes into the most exhausting match you've ever seen. And they go crazy. And no lie, for 5 minutes, they both no sell it. They both like just lay there. And they're both like not moving. And you're like, oh my God, like how is this still happening? And then the ref's not even counting at this point. He's just staring at the guys like, whoa. And then, but then he starts counting and they both get into the ring by 20. Cause you know, in Japanese wrestling, instead of counting to 10, they get to 20.
Right.
They both get in the ring and wrestle for 25 more minutes.
After that.
Oh that's my awesome. God. Like what? But that's where I got my start on like, this Japanese stuff is legit. Like, I don't care if it's quote unquote fake. You show this match to somebody and they're going to be like, this is better than UFC, man. Like, this is, right. These guys are going at it. Like, yeah, I'm going to put it in the show notes. And I want to say it's 1 hour and 12 minutes. And I want to say the first 15 are the entrances and then they do the thing. And it's for the GHC Noah Heavyweight Championship. It gets introduced by like, maybe Dory Funk or something. Mm-hmm. So like they're treating it once again like a big prize fight. But I've never heard a Japanese crowd like this in my life. So these are two guys that are just so over. They're beloved in Japan. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Imagine basically a Japanese version of that Rock versus Hogan. And that's what this is for two guys that have already paid their dues. They're both on their way out of the career of the wrestling part. I want to say Mitsuhara Misawa died when 2006 or something. So not long after this. But Mitsuhara Misawa died in the ring. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, he died in the ring because he took a bad suplex and it pinched a nerve in his spine. He was paralyzed and he died right there. Yeah, like, here's a guy that loved it so much. He did it till his dying day, and he died doing what he loved. And Mitsuhara Misawa was one of those guys that he, by far and away, one of the probably in the top 10 greatest ever. No matter what language, no matter what, like, Mitsuhara Misawa is on another level. Kento Kobashi has a place in my heart because he was the instructor of who we know as Kenta and Hideo Itami. So that whole lineage went to Kenta, basically, and, you know, Marufuji, and, you know, you have these guys that are taught by the guys that were taught by the creators of Strong Style and King's Road, and then that's how they passed down the craft. But, like, if you want to see the two masters of Japanese wrestling, like, absolute, even, and it was funny, because I went through my list, and I wanted to match it up with the Dave Meltzer 5-star ratings. I was like, I wonder if any of my matches are 5-star. And whenever I had Shinsuke versus, you know, Shinsuke versus Ibushi is a 5-star match. The Mitsuhara Misawa versus Kenta Kobashi is a 5-star match. John Cena versus CM Punk, 5-star match. The Iron Man match, 5-star match. So it's hilarious. Because a lot of these that we're picking, like Dave Meltzer, who's considered one of the more famous or infamous, however you want to look at it, guys that does wrestling reviews, 5 stars is kind of his cream of the crop. He was like, no one's ever wrestled a perfect match, but 5 stars is as close as you can get. So out of our top 10 between the two of us, easily half of them are 5-star matches. Easily. If not more. I need to go in and look at them. But yeah, so I highly recommend everybody out there jot down the matches, especially those last two. If you only watch two matches from this whole deal, watch Shinsuke Nakamura versus Kota Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom 9, and watch Mitsuhara Misawa versus Kento Kobashi, Pro Wrestling Noah in 2003, and you'll be like, oh, I'm set. Like, everything else seems kind of... small potatoes compared to those two. But yeah, I'll try my best to get that, because I think the Wrestle Kingdom 9 one's going to be the harder one to track down a embeddable video of. But we'll see. We'll see if we can get it. I know for a fact the Kobashi one's up there, because that's how I watched it. Like,
probably up on my Daily Motion.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll get it embedded. Somehow we'll get it embedded. But yeah, that's our each top five list. I know we talked about how hard it is to make top five lists. And this is true. It's completely subjective. This could all change tomorrow. But, like, I'm confident enough in both of our lists that I would highly recommend any of these matches. Like, even if 10 matches come out tomorrow that are 10 times better than anything we talked about today, you're not going to have a bad time watching these 10 matches. Like,
yeah, exactly.
They're all quality. Like, they're all some of the best of the best. And it was funny because I really thought about, you talked about WrestleMania 3 with Andre versus Hogan. I was very tempted to put Macho Man Randy Savage versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat from WrestleMania 3. Because if you watch that match back, that's like, that's indie wrestling today, 30 years ago. You know, like, they did the stuff with the false finishes and the, you know, the big high flying moves and the counters and the I'm gonna reverse your pump handle slam with a backbreaker with a this and then we're gonna do that, you know. So basically it's a Ring of Honor match.
Everybody is talking about that match.
There's some high quality stuff here. Now I'm trying to think of what the picture should be for the thumbnail. You know,
it should not be our one and twos.
I don't think it should be a picture of Doink the Clown and James Ellsworth. The Sandman.
Maybe the Survivor Series where it was Jerry Lawler versus the Doinks. So the Kings. And,
or even better, Michael Cole versus Jerry Lawler. You remember that?
There you go.
We'll put the gobbledygooker on it.
Oh man.
If I can find a good picture of the Miz and dressed as the chicken and Dolph Ziggler as the Colonel.
Just do that. That's fine.
That's fine. It's fine. Just it's all that. Fine.
It's fine.
Oh man. Oh, God. It's still the best. What is it called? Like Mother Clucker's chicken or something? Like yeah, something Mother ridiculous. Just terrible. Oh. Oh, but I think that's it for this week. But I did want to say two things. Most importantly, send us your questions through Twitter for next week. We will do a question and answer, brothering around. Use the hashtag brothering around or send us messages directly, twitter.com/MarcoPolo177 to hit up Marco and twitter.com/CommieDeHobo to hit up me. Send us any question. Doesn't have to be about anything really. Or if you agreed with our list, if you disagreed with it, we want to hear back from you on that. Just any questions you may have for us. We're just going to, next week is just going to be a full mailbag episode. It'll be a full, our first big Q&A. That's what we'll do, man. It'll be a lot of fun. And we'd like to hear what your guys' favorite matches are. So send those in too. We might read some on the show.
Yeah, you know, I would love to hear people's like their favorite matches just so we can like, oh yeah, that happened.
Yes, that's the fun. Like,
why would that be your favorite match? What it's are like, you really? Talking about?
Eva Marie versus no.
Right. Oh man.
But the second most important thing, I watched about 5 more episodes of Terrace House.
Did you? Oh, yeah,
Yeah, man.
Your fiance posted on Facebook, and I was like, I totally did not just download the whole
the open.
And I'll tell you today, I did not listen to it like 5 times or 5 or 6, 7, 8 times on the way home.
It gives motivation to have a good day.
Yeah. You know,
this is the stuff right here. This is good stuff. Oh man! So slight spoilers for Terrace House, and we'll probably talk all about it tomorrow or next week, especially if we don't get a lot of questions. But now the 2 people left and their replacements have shown up. That's all I'm gonna say.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very weird. The fact that they could fucking leave anyway. I didn't know that was an option. It's not. It's like, oh well, that's sort of.
This is why we need to do a spoiler cast because I want to talk about it. But
yeah, right.
That happened.
I didn't know that was a thing you could do. It's like, oh god, I'm leaving. Oh okay, bye. Like
so when the first person or when the first new person came, I was an immediate fan because of what they're into.
Yes,
right? I was like, I lived that life.
Yes, his shorts. His shorts were a dead giveaway because his shorts came on the screen.
Right.
And like, I was watching with the fiance and I was like, oh, I know those shorts. Like, I know what those shorts are for.
Yeah. So I was like, I live that life because he does the same thing I do. Like, I don't want to give it away, but it's just, I was like, I like him. He's a good replacement. I was almost mad that like, oh man, he has to go, but okay, I guess he has to do what he has to do. And then they transition to this one, and then the hosts are freaking out, like, what?
Yeah, oh, the hosts have been my new favorite person. Part lately.
Yeah.
That comedian, the one with the glasses, makes me laugh.
I love the comedian.
Every single time. He wants it all to just go up in a big fire, and it makes me laugh. Because he's like, oh, I cannot wait for them to have bad fortune. And I was like, who says that? Right. Like, that's so mean. It's so funny.
That's the heel, man.
Oh, it's so funny.
Dude.
And then the second person came in. So that's the last episode we watched was the second person came in.
Okay.
And then the first new person was like, hey, this person might be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole weird love triangle. There's like five love triangles, by the way. There's a whole bunch of them. So we're going to see where that goes. But
yeah.
But yeah, overall, it's good times.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I'm in mid season two.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's all I can say is I want to say it is the most drama filled like group of episodes that I've seen of the entire like series of Terrace House.
Wow.
It is the most drama filled, and I'm in the middle of it, and I'm like, yeah. And one of the girls is like, you know, I'm just honest. I just say what I feel. And then when other people do it, and it's like, how dare you be honest and say how you feel? And I'm like, for this girl's like, bitch, I do what I want, that type of thing.
Oh, that's amazing.
So like, there's this thing going on, and now they have a house meeting because they're trying to, in a way, like, confront her. And it's like, dude, you're doing what you said you weren't going to do. And yeah, then she's all like, I do what I want. I'm waiting. It's like, oh man, what's going to happen? So yeah, that's where I'm at. But yeah, it's the most drama filled out of the two seasons, most drama right now. So yeah,
one of my favorite parts about it is the cameras are so good at capturing the little moments to where somebody gets like backstabbed or something, and or like, oh, so and so was talking to this guy, and I think I might like him. And then the girl that actually does like him already will like be piercing bullets through them from across the room.
Yeah,
it's the best.
You see the look, like, oh.
Oh, right? And then I'll tell you what, I feel so bad for Tap right
for
now.
Who?
Like, for Tap, because holy shit, that whole thing, I feel so, he got shafted, man. And like, med student's an idiot, but yeah, it's a whole thing. It's like, you think someone wanted to get their doctorate would be smarter than this, but Jesus.
Right, right.
And I knew it was coming too. I knew what all that stuff was happening.
We got to stop because I still want to do a spoiler cast.
We can go on for another hour and a half.
We can go on.
Terrace House.
But let's save it. Let's save it for now. Let's save it for an episode.
We'll save it. Question and answers. Please send them to us. Twitter. Just use the hashtag brothering around. We're going to be searching for that over the next week. We record on Wednesdays, so this is probably going to go up on Thursday. But yeah, so 21st, I think, something like that. So yeah, 21st is when we're going to be recording it. We'll be taking questions up to the time we go on air. So I mean, get them in, get them in as soon as possible to ensure that it's going to be read on the show. So yeah, get them in ASAP. But yeah, hit us up on Twitter, direct message, use the hashtag. Even comment on comedyhobo.com. If you're going to give us a comment, give us a shout out there. Go leave a comment on this episode. You could even do it on YouTube. We may not see it as immediately as if you do it on the website or do it through Twitter. But we'll try our best to keep tabs on it. But yeah, definitely, if you want to get your question read on the show, hit us up on Twitter. Out of all the places, that's the thing we check the most.
Yeah, that's the best way.
Yeah, so twitter.com/MarcoPolo177 or twitter.com/NerdInTheBay for his official show page. And then mine is just going to be twitter.com/CommieToHobo for everything. But yeah, that has been Brethren Around, our top five wrestling matches of all time. This might be one of those things that we have to do every year.
See if our list for like the last year.
Our list change and stuff like that. So, but yeah, a lot of fun to kind of dig in real deep on the wrestling nerd side of things. But I will say something very much to look forward to is going to be Wrestle Kingdom 11 because of Okada versus Kenny Omega for the title. I think that might be a match of the year candidate because both of those guys have been on a tear like crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to do it. That's going to do it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was going to say Okada came from beating Marufuji for the title. And then Kenny Omega's just uphill is going, the stock is rising up. And then
It is
the whole, I mean, I'm a little disappointed with Cody Rhodes first match for Wrestle Kingdom because it's with Juice Robinson, but that's still going to be pretty cool at the same time.
Yeah, something weird about that. I've been watching Cody Rhodes matches on the indie circuit.
Mm-hmm.
He is definitely trained not indie style.
Okay.
So I saw his match with Chris Hero. I saw his match. God, who else did he wrestle with? I've seen like three of his matches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great example of the main difference between WWE style and other styles across the world. Sometimes it works great. Like, you get somebody as talented as Chris Hero in there. He's worked NXT. He was in WWE for a little bit. Like, he's been all around the world. He's wrestled indies. He's wrestled in Japan. Like, Chris Hero can wrestle with anybody, and he could give you a 4.5-star match any day of the week. So that match was pretty great. Good storytelling. But then some of the other matches, very regimented, I guess. Very... The styles haven't mixed very well. And which is weird, because I loved Cody Rhodes in WWE. I thought he had a very fluid style. I liked the Stardust character, even though he hated it. Like, Cody Rhodes ended up despising Stardust, which I thought was weird. I always dug it. I thought Stardust has the best entrance music in WWE. Right. Like, that was an awesome beat. Like, the whole thing with Stephen Amell from Green Arrow. I liked it. I thought it was cool stuff, and I thought it was very fluid and very dynamic. But then seeing him on the indies working the indie style, he's never done it before. So it's this weird kind of disconnect in he's wanting to run a WWE style match, and that's not what's happening.
He's doing the reverse. Like same thing with Luke Gallows. Like, he started with WWE, and then he went to like New Japan and indies. Yes. He's going down the same road as Luke Gallows.
Yeah, and then Luke Gallows got real, real good. Now Luke Gallows, I want to say, is probably better than he's ever been. But and Carl Anderson did the reverse. So Carl Anderson really cut his chops in New Japan, and then came over for the WWE style. But like, his work in New Japan, I'll tell you what, if you want to see a killer match. Carl Anderson versus Shinsuke Nakamura. That was a hell of a match. And he was called the Machine Gun. Machine Gun Carl Anderson. So anything Machine Gun, awesome. But then he hasn't really had a time to shine here in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
He's been kind of a job squad, him and Doc. But they'll get their time. I'm not too worried about it.
They're getting paid, so.
Yeah, exactly. They get to support their family. Yeah, I'm way fine with it. I could see them being tag champs and holding the belts for a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, so that'll be good. So that whole Kenny Omega versus Okada, I have that same buzz about it. I'm like, we're going to see something. Because here are two guys that are about it. Like, in... Yeah, Kenny Omega's been on a tear lately. He has been crazy. But anyway, that's our WrestleCast. That's episode number 10 of Brothering Around. Thank you guys for the 10 episodes in the bag.
Yeah.
Good stuff. We're going to see you guys next week for the question and answer episode of Brothering Around. Until next time, stay safe. We'll see you then.
Send in your questions, please.
Yes, twitter.com/MarcoPolo177.
And call me the hobo.